change. This train not taking passengers.
Jesus Christ. Hey, everyone. That was me. Yeah, I won't air that, but that was me bringing up last night's dinner. For the last, maybe 2 weeks, roughly. Yeah, about 2 weeks. I've been going through a moving process. So, yeah, a lot of sporadic meals. Just basically eating whatever I can, whenever I can. A lot of crap. A lot of frozen meals, all that sort of stuff. And last night, I'd been working all day, got home, and it was the first sort of normal evening that I had. I'd made a roast and, yeah, roasted some veggies or whatever it was. But I ate like a maniac. And in the span of the hour and a half, 2 hours after the meal or during the meal, I ended up having a glass of wine because I used wine to cook the, marinate the roast with, which I never do. Yeah, it's a once-in-a-year thing. It's when I moved, I found all these empty bottles. I found all these bottles of wine at the back of my pantry, which, you know, either have been gifted to me or whatever. I mean, I would never go out of my way to buy a bottle of wine. And, yeah, I thought, well, why don't I get fancy and, you know, marinate some of this meat with it, which was pretty good. But I ended up having a glass of wine with it, which I never drink. Then I ended up preceded it with a beer because I was just trying to calm down from all the caffeine I've had in the last couple of days. Which is very healthy. And then right before bed, well, not right before bed, but as I was lying there in this pool of self-despair, I thought, I feel like a white Russian. So, you know, Kahlua, which has caffeine in it as well, which I shouldn't be drinking, milk, which my doctor has said to me I need to avoid, and more alcohol. So, yeah, I don't know if it's anxiety or it's indigestion, but I woke up at about 5 this morning and just couldn't get back to sleep. It's 7 now. Yeah, and after 2 hours of tossing and turning and just overdoing my hair, I said, stuff it. I'll get up and go to the office and do a solo. It's probably been, when was the last time I did a solo? Let me just check this out. 1, 2, and I've got one in the 8th or the 9th last year. 9th, September. Sure, I did one in September. Really? Anyway. I always say that I was going to try and get more of these done just as circuit breakers between episodes. I know it's been kind of slow on the podcast front, but it's just been just incredibly busy. I've got a bunch of people lined up that I want to bring in and have a chat with, but it's just too hard. When you move by yourself, you know, and especially my situation, I downsized from a two-bedroom to a one-bedroom. So, you know, the plus of that was moving my office out of my house. I've been working out of my bedroom since I was 14 years old, you know, and it's really weird. I look at photos now from back then and I've legit got everything in my bedroom. You know, I've got a studio, I've got an office, I've got a kitchen. It's amazing. And that wasn't that long ago. I mean, I moved into my first place when I was about 27 or something. So it was because I was still traveling a lot up until then. And yeah, it's crazy just how far like things spread. I mean, I downsized to a one-bedroom, still in the area that I like that I'm living in. My office is 4 minutes away from my house, so I literally got in the car this morning, fired up the iPod in the car, and Sean Kingston Beat It was about, I don't know, a third of the way in. So it must have been about a three-minute drive, all up, 3.5 by the time I got into the building. So it's really not that much difference. The good thing about it is it separates work-life balance a bit. You know, I no longer sort of, you know, get up in the morning at 8, turn the computer on, sit down with cereal, sit there till, you know, God knows when, leave because I remember I need to eat or something, and then come back, and then doesn't matter if I go out for the evening, I'll come back and just turn the computer on, you know, as a reflex, and then just sit there and fucking waste time until God knows what time. So this is good. I'm forcing myself to sort of go home and just switch off momentarily anyway. I still send emails on the phone and all that. And I just realized when I got into the office, I went to the vending machine because I need something to bring this indigestion down. And the one thing I picked up was a liquid brekkie, naturally Next Buzz sugar-free liquid brekkie. It's milk, for fuck's sakes, which I shouldn't be having. Has anyone had one of these? It tastes like cardboard. And other than the fact that there's no sugar in it, the straw is made of cardboard. just getting it out of the pack just crumples it. The second you put it in the container, it melts. We are so close to that Soylent Green thing. This is a 4.5-star health star rating. And new and improved taste. I can't imagine what this tasted like before the new and improved. Improved from what? Who defined that it was improved? Who determined that? I'd love to be part of these focus groups and just totally throw them out of the work. Spanner up their focus group. Ah, delicious, mate. It tastes like cod liver oil or something. Yeah, I know I said I'd be doing more of these a while back. I really do want to try. And I feel like now I actually have the setup for it. One thing about having this office as well, being this close, it's never going to get contaminated the way it would if you're working out of home. If you have an office set up at home, typically it's your second bedroom, you know, or a study nook or something like that. You know, it becomes a dumping ground. One thing I've done in the move, which I need to go back and refine again, is clear out a lot of dead weight. I must have thrown out 3-4 sacks worth of stuff, like with one of those big Hessian moving bags, the ones that the Asians always have at markets. I filled them with everything. I threw out so much stuff indiscriminately, stuff that didn't work, stuff I didn't need, stuff from the past. There's just no point. You know, hoarding is just really bad. When you're limited with space, you really realize just how much, like, it accumulates. So, yeah, the plus about having this office is the fact that I'm never going to find plates of food in here. I'm never going to have, you know, dirty clothes and or clothes that are drying that I need to put away and have just whisked away because, you know, someone's coming over or I need to make room or whatever. Like, there just literally is no room. There's my desk. There's a, you know, I've brought in two bookshelves sort of things, racks, and that's pretty much it. You know, the amount of paperwork I threw out before I moved, I sat down and emptied all the drawers and I threw out stuff from 10, 15 years ago. You know, it's no longer relevant, which is crazy because I was looking at it. And at the start, I was being really sort of picky with it and reading through a lot of the stuff. I'm like, what am I doing? This has no relevance anymore to my life. We're so far removed from it. Yeah, it's amazing what you think is important. Yeah, a decade ago. I messaged a cousin of mine that lives in France. They'd put up something on social, so they were traveling around or something. I can't remember, but I touched base with them. I haven't spoken to them in a while. They obviously used to live in Melbourne. And we're just going over, like, the last couple of years, and I realize the last couple of years have been a massive ride for me. I'm just sort of only coming out of the storm now. And even so, it's really not calming down at all. But when I looked back at, like, 2019 to 2024, I mean, it's more than 4 years. It's 5 years. It hasn't actually stopped. The amount of changes that I've gone through in the last 5 years, nothing like I've ever actually experienced that consistently. There was a period in, like, the late noughties and, you know, from 2014 to 2017, basically, where not much changed for me. You know, I was just working the one job that I had. I was living in the same area, still in the hood, you know, and yeah, people sort of came and went, but nothing really changed on that front. But then from 2019, when I first left that job that I'd been at for nearly 9 years, bounced around, found new work, different field, and then just things started escalating from that point. Like, I moved finally out of the hood in my first rental, and then just the amount of life changes in the last 3-4 years have just been crazy. I'm starting to take stock of it now purely because I've had to move and things are coming to a head again, you know. You're just forced to sort of figure it out as you go. I like change. Change is progression. But I really was hoping for some stability this next sort of quarter. This year anyway, I thought I would have some sort of just, you know, ride the wave a bit more and just chill and I don't know. I don't think I'm going to have it just because of the fact that, yeah, I've been made redundant at work, so I've got about a month to come up with a new job that's going to cover everything in my lifestyle right now, which I've whittled down to bare necessities now. But hopefully that's it. Once you get over that hill, everything else will sort of fall in line. I don't know. I know we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to sort of keep shit moving, and then there are people that are happy to just ride the wave. At the same time, I've got a lot of people in my life that I know that come up with either ideas or have ideas and, you know, want to get things off the ground with certain stuff and they just lose steam almost immediately. They don't follow anything through. I think that's my problem. I used to leave a lot of stuff up in the air and I went out without because of it. So, yeah, maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I just started taking things on. And now it's just a matter of if you want to get it done, you just get it done. Anyway, I know I'm rambling. Anyway, why did I come here? Oh, yeah. I wanted to sort of do a PSA on the public, on the domestic violence front. Over the last, I don't know, 48 hours, 72 hours, there's been this big thing regarding domestic violence in Australia. What are the statistics? You look them up. Over the past few years, a woman has been violently killed in Australia about once a week on average. The death of 26 women in the first 114 days of 2024 is equivalent to one every 4.38 days, which the Prime Minister has described as a crisis. Disgusting statistic, like absolutely wrong. The fact that it's not like, you know, a death on the road or something, but it's a death in a domestic violence case, it's not right. It's not right. But I sort of wanted to address it because a lot of the blame, I mean, all the blame is falling on men, saying we're not doing enough to address this, we're not doing enough to do something about it, blah, blah, blah. And then the counter thing is, you know, look, I wanted to sort of, you know, here's a header, just ahead of all this. I'm not a misogynist, obviously. I'm not against protecting the rights of women or safety of women or anything like that. I'm not coming off as an Andrew Tate saying, you know, it's all his fault. I mean, that guy's latest grift is if you're having sex with women, then you're gay. Jesus Christ. I just wanted to sort of bring up my own experience regarding this sort of stuff and why this sort of really, I don't know, over the last, 48 hours, I've seen it like all over sort of social media, all over the news, you know, people reposting stuff about, you know, protect women and all that sort of thing and coming out saying men have to do more. And the question is, what more can we do? We don't know any animals like this, blah, blah, blah. I was going to bring up a few examples of situations that I've known and where I think there are shortfalls. I mean, obviously, there's still a big stigma regarding, you know, social structure and social makeup and, you know, all that sort of thing. I grew up in a house with domestic violence. My earliest memories are of domestic violence. And, you know, as a kid, it was traumatic as fuck. It still is. Like, you know, it's sad that that's some of my earliest memories. But, you know, you look at a Greek household in the 80s and it was pretty fairly common. It was more common than I thought. Just, you know, most people just didn't talk about it. And it wasn't just the Greeks. It was, you know, any household, really. And that's why I get angry when people say that, you know, marriages were built to last back in the day. And I always bring up the same thing. I said, no, they weren't built to last. Women just didn't have the freedoms they have now. They just were, you know, not allowed to work, didn't have access to income and couldn't get out and just dealt with, you know, premeditated beatings and rape. Just because they weren't the breadwinners in a household. It's got nothing to do with, you know, marriages being built to last. It was just structured that way. But I'm trying not to ramble, but I'll be honest, I'm really tired. I just want to talk about this a bit in regards to, my own experiences and what I think, where some of the shortfalls are in regards to, say, reporting of this sort of stuff and all that sort of thing. And I can only talk about my own experience. Everyone has their own experience. And if you have your own experience, I honestly ask you to come forward. Come on the pod. Talk about it. We've had, in the last 2-3 years, we've had 3 different victims of domestic violence. Come on. And like, as I've said before, you know, 2 women and 1 man have come on. Both all have remained anonymous. All have had significantly different experiences. The man was the one that experienced the most physical abuse, and he was the one that was listened to the least. He was the one who was taken off the handcuffs every time his ex would make a claim, just crying wolf. You know, beyond any reasonable doubt, he was dragged in, hauled in front of a judge or, you know, in a holding cell until he could be let go, basically. But that's another experience. That's their experience. But it's just a point. So the whole thing about, you know, men need to be doing more, men need to be saying more, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I mean, these, it's frustrating because the sentence, "I don't know any men like this, and I would never stand for it if I ever saw it in front of me," that stands, that just stands as it is. The amount of guys I know that have good Samaritaned up, you know, in circumstances in the public where you'll see a guy, you know, having a go at a woman or whatever, and they'll stand up and say, "What are you doing?" You know, and pull his head in. You know, I know guys like this. Like, you know, this happens more often than you think. At the same time, you can't even get involved anymore because you may be part of a lawsuit somewhere, or you don't know what's going to happen to you. But it's not the point. Violence is violence, and violence has existed since the beginning of time. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying. The thing that gets me is, you know, I'm going to use two of my own experiences with this sort of thing and just tell me what more I could have done or where I could have done something differently. So we'll take experience A, okay? And again, I encourage anyone to come forward, come in with your stories, counter me, whatever, you know, tell me what could be done differently. Give me a solution. Give me your own experiences with sort of domestic violence and stuff like that. So I'll get to the point. Take Exhibit A. Exhibit A started with a couple that I know. I knew the woman since the time I was about 16. Knew her partner, who became her husband and the father of her child. Knew him, you know, as long as they'd been sort of together. So let's just say 2010, you know, as a starting off number of me getting to know them both better as a couple. Her I'd known, obviously, a good nearly 10 years earlier than that. But let's just start there. I was at their wedding, which was in 2014 possibly, 2015, somewhere around there. Okay. So I'd been part of their lives, okay? Same social group sort of thing, you know, similar friends, all that sort of stuff. Okay. And yeah, I consider them both friends. And I knew them pretty well. Now, they both had an issue with substance abuse. They both had an issue with, like, domestic violence, all that sort of stuff. It was apparent. It became more apparent to me because I would start getting phone calls, you know, at night where she was worried, she was upset, that they had a fight. So I had a lot of sort of late-night runs where I would go and just, you know, pick her up from somewhere and say, "What's going on?" You know, talk it out, this sort of thing. And just sort of, you know, just being a friend, basically. Now, you fast forward till 2020. This is why I remember it. It was during when lockdowns first started. I was going through some personal stuff as well, so I was on edge in regard to my situation. And I got one or too many phone calls really late at night, you know, 1, 2 in the morning, like hysterical sort of stuff. DV situation at home, substance abuse was involved, the potential harming of a child, all that sort of thing. And I just cracked. I said, "I'm done." Like, I'm fucking done. And I'd said, you know, call the cops, do something, get out of there. But you can't just keep going back and trying to get this to work, you know, for whatever reason. You're either getting beaten down on, or the child, at worst case scenario, the child's going to get killed. You know, there was things about, you know, people getting into cars while under the influence, you know, with a child in the passenger seat or whatever. And I said, okay, if not for you, do it for your child. Okay, this is traumatizing to them in the least. I can say it because I've been there myself. And I got one or two phone calls like that. And in the end, I ended up calling the cops. I had enough. I got the address. And I would have called a lot earlier if I'd had the address of where they lived. I couldn't remember what it was. I didn't know it. I can't remember how I got it. But this was all, you know, it happened really quickly. And I called the police and said, "Nah, I'm done. Someone's going to turn up dead, you know, or whatever. And this is toxic." I go, you know, I love both of them, but they needed help, you know. So, yeah, I called the cops at 2 in the morning or whatever it was, 1, 2 in the morning. They go around there, they separate them, you know, they remove the child, all that sort of thing. And from that point, it sort of just, I didn't lose contact entirely, but I distanced myself. And from what I heard, you know, I touched base with, I think, the mother maybe a year or two later, I can't remember. But they were always sort of in and around. And, yeah, like they eventually separated, you know, don't know how far on track they've both got in their lives, but I didn't want it on my head that someone was could potentially be dead and become, you know, from that incident, there was a child involved, all that sort of thing. And I remember in the conversations that I'd had with the mother in the lead up to and after, she was saying things like they were trying for another kid and all this sort of thing. And I'm like, why? Oh, you know, keeping up with the Joneses and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, you can't look after the child you have. You have a toxic environment. Why would you? Why on earth would you think about having another kid? And anyone listening to this can sort of judge now and say, oh, they're idiots, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, but this is so common. This is ridiculously common. I know so many people that have gone through similar situations like this. In the end, she thanked me at some point for doing what I did and intervening and saying that I potentially saved her life and her child's. And I said, look, I go, I care about you guys both. I go, I'm not pinning one parent against the other, but you both need help. And your situation is just toxic. And it's no good for anyone. No one's going to be any good for anyone. So that was one situation. Second situation is more recent. And it was a young couple again that I know. And after a brief sort of marriage, you know, in this scenario, it's a bit different. The male is entirely just a piece of shit, just a sociopathic narcissist, you know, no saving grace, just a piece of dog shit, literally. But again, the same things had popped up. When all of it sort of started coming to fruition, when it was starting to hit the fan, I asked the questions. I go, were there any signs? Did you see it? And everyone, you know, I'm friends with the woman involved in this and her mother. And it was like, oh, I know you bamboozled us and, you know, this is all a smokescreen. And I said, really? Okay, well, are you sure there were never any signs? And then slowly through the cracks, oh, yeah, there was this incident. Then there was this incident. Then there was this incident. I'm like, none of this would fly if it was me reacting like this, if it was me exhibiting this behavior. I'd be in the street. I'd be by myself. Yet somehow these pieces of shit managed to get families around them, you know? I go, okay, so there were signs. And then as it started to escalate, like I mean, you fast forward a year or whatever, and I was under the assumption the couple were separated, where in fact I find out that she's actually pregnant with her second. I said, why would you be pregnant with your second? I honestly thought you'd separated, like that there was like literally toxic controlling behavior, you know, maybe not outright violence, but there was definitely verbal abuse and all that sort of stuff. Why would you fall pregnant to someone like that? Oh, just trying to help the situation or whatever. I don't remember the reasoning, okay? And again, no one was coerced, no one was raped. These are level-headed women, intelligent, seemingly intelligent women, making their own decisions, full independence. And they're doing things like this, allowing themselves to get pregnant to guys that are completely toxic and wrong for them because they think it's going to get better. Now, I'm not blaming anyone. I'm just making a point of where does the responsibility lie at some point. Anyway, not to get hung up on that, but I'm just trying to get to the next point. Now, this is situation two, obviously. She was well pregnant and the relationship was starting to just break down completely, you know, all types of shit. And I'd check in every now and then and hear about, you know, the latest sort of thing just from dribs and drabs between the woman and her mother and all that sort of stuff. And I remember one incident happened where there was an AVO put in place. So he'd been effectively kicked out and barred from making contact, going back to the house, all that sort of stuff. And he'd come back to the house. He'd broken in. I think through a window or a door, I can't remember what it was, but he effectively breaking and entering was definitely there. Trespassing was definitely there. And the mother was there as well at the same time. And she went to call the cops or something and he's grabbed the phone, he's thrown it, like pushed her back. I can't remember, but there was definitely, just from what I got told, there was definitely breaking and entering, trespassing, assault. And eventually I think she called the cops and he took off. And I said to the mother, look, at what point do you not follow this up? This is clearly you know, a breach. And he said, oh, he's too scared to come back. He won't come back. What are you talking about? He's already flouted the AVO. He's already flouted any regulations that are put in place, seemingly no consequences. What do you mean? Like, it's there. Like, it's happened. And then the mother's reasoning was that she didn't want her grandkids to know that their father had gone to jail, could possibly have gone to jail or whatever, as an outcome, you know, of her moving forward with a call to the cops and all that sort of thing. And I said, so when will you be happy for their kids to know their father's been in jail? When their mother becomes a statistic? Is that what we're waiting for? Okay, you read about it every day in the news. A woman has been killed. And it's because of shit like this. It's one thing, you know, to be in love. It's one thing to think that you can do something to make something better. But once it starts to, teeter over and this shit sort of starts happening, it's plain as day. It's literally violence. It's literally everything that you read about. But you're still turning a blind eye because you'd rather, you know, save face or save some personal pride. Or you think it takes, like, seriously, man. And the thing is that these are just two of my experiences. There's more there, like a few other different people. These are just two of the more prominent ones that I can think of right now. But that's what I was trying to say. Like, that was the whole point. You've got women not reporting this. And not reporting, the answer is stop violence. Yeah, obviously, ideal world. I'd love to stop violence. If we could stop violence tomorrow, we'll do it. But if women aren't reporting this shit or choosing to go back to save face, to fix a situation, like when they become a statistic, then who do we blame? Again, I'm not hating on women. I'm not a misogynist. I can't believe I actually have to keep apologizing for this just to cover my ass. Because, yeah, violence is not the answer and it needs to stop. But I'm just making a point. I had to go out of my way to report shit that women themselves didn't want to report themselves because they didn't want it to lead to more stuff or they thought there was still hope. It's like, nah, man, at what point does that stop? And there's some form of responsibility put back on the onus. It doesn't justify women being killed. Doesn't justify, you know, any of the women that have been killed in the last 2 weeks. Doesn't justify any of that. 100% could have been avoided. Should have been avoided. Should never have happened. Conversations should be having had. It's not about that, but I'm just bringing up two experiences in recent history that I've gone through, and it's literally been me saying, at what point do you actually report this? Do you report it once you become a statistic? Because you won't be able to, and I don't want to be the one to do it. And that's the whole point. Yeah, you know, interestingly, I know a guy, he's like a mate of a mate of a mate, but yeah, we talk every now and then, just casually, you know, and he's gone through a separation. He's been separated for just under a year. And this guy, I can honestly vouch, you know, the times that I've met him and know what I know about him, lovely guy, you know, real sort of warm, open, family man sort of type of guy, no kids, wants kids, all that sort of thing. And he got married and they've gone through a separate, and I hadn't spoken to him since he'd gone married or at least since he'd gone separated. So he dropped the ball on me a couple of months ago, like, hey man, you know, just so you know, my partner and I are no longer together, this and that. I said, oh, that's a shame, you know, what happened, all that sort of thing. And just as, you know, he's talking a bit more openly now with me over the last couple of weeks, he's telling me things like, you know, his partner had been cheating on him for a period with an ex of hers and she's taken off and she's living with him now. I said, oh, okay. So, what, you know, what actually happened? What's the skinny of it? And he's telling me, like, the partner's an ex-jailbird, like ice junkie or something. He's come out from prison. Basically, they came out, he called her up and she went running. And, you know, if that's how it is, then that's how it is. Like, I'm not want to say, oh, you can't be with who you want to be with. But he's trying to get his divorce because they're going to be, you know, legally separated for a year or whatever. So he's trying to contact her to get the divorce and all that sort of thing and organize it. And he was open to counseling and all that sort of thing. Initially, she's turned her back on it and said, no, I don't want it. You know, I'm done, which is fine. You know, But she's turned around and said something like, I don't believe in divorce. And so he's like, well, what do you want me to do? I'm trying to live my life right now, trying to get back on track, trying to go through therapy. You've left me to live with your ex, but you don't want to divorce me because you don't believe in divorce. That makes no sense. So then this guy's life is going to be in limbo for like the next God knows how long until she decides to pull her finger out. I've spoken to some people in these situations regarding like the domestic violence thing and reporting it to cops, and police are generally pretty sketchy. Like the law system's really convoluted and there are a lot of, you know, holes and stuff that people can fall into, and I totally get that. But at some point, the onus has to come back on straightforwardness. The number of women not reporting stuff because they think they can just have another kid and that'll fix the situation and make someone love them more. You know, that's the shit we need to re-educate. You know, men that think that they can just keep working and providing and think that'll make someone want them more or make someone change. Doesn't work. Does not work. These are just my thoughts on a Saturday morning at 7:45. Jesus Christ, I haven't slept. But yeah, it's just a few things that I was thinking about. You know, violence against women is not okay. I think there's obviously deeper issues, deeper things that need to be sort of, you know, addressed. But yeah, the way we go about things just generally needs to be overhauled. You know, there's cause and effect for everything. Some men are just pieces of shit. Some women cry wolf. You know, some people get married and have kids for the wrong fucking reasons. And that's been happening since the start. It's going to keep happening forever. But let's not twist. Let's not put a narrative on it, you know, that doesn't belong there. 100%, you know, conversations need to be made. But again, who was connected to any of these women, 1 in 4, that are getting killed by, you know, ex-partners and stuff like that? Where are these communities? If I knew of a mate that was beating on his missus, I would pull him the fuck up, as I have. I literally did that. I'm not the only one. I'm not a hero. I'm not the patron saint for women. None of that. I'm just making a point. That's me. That's one person. I can't think of any situations where I've known a guy to okay touching up a woman because she's, you know, disrespected him or something. Never. And, you know, doesn't make my social group any better or worse than yours. I'm just saying. Look, it's just, I'm just having the conversation. Yeah. But yeah. Jesus, that's depressing. What a way to start off the weekend. What difference does it make? I'm working anyway. Oh, God. Yeah. Thanks to all the people that have been jumping on board with the pod. A lot of new listeners, all that sort of stuff. See, I don't know who's actually listening to this, what percentage of people that actually know me and can expect me to put something out like this, or people that have been listening for a while that sort of know where I'd be coming from, or people that are just new and have no idea. I got no idea. Make yourselves known. Maybe I'll send you some merch if you want, maybe a mug. Oh, God. I don't actually have anything funny or entertaining more to say. I just thought this would be a nice PSA, just in regards to my experience with domestic violence. Please don't come at me with pitchforks. Yeah, you want to have a conversation, I'm happy to have one. And don't get the messaging twisted. You can get all angry and blame me or men or whatever. Go ahead. That's not what I'm doing. I assume you're smart enough. I know my listeners are smart enough to know the difference. I'm just talking about onus, responsibility, and self-awareness. I'm not saying that women have asked to be killed. That's the last thing I'm saying, and I'll underline it, bold, okay? But I'm just talking about two experiences that I've had in recent history where that's how it went down, and I had to step in and say, fucking wake up. Yeah. And I can't imagine how many more situations like this that go unreported, especially on the community itself. You know, I remember a year or two ago, when was it, when I had the cousins into the studio and we were talking about domestic violence in their households and all that sort of stuff. You know, a lot of shit's suppressed in those communities too. They're suppressed in every community. You know, no one wants to discuss domestic violence or statutory rape or anything like that. It's just not discussed. It's getting better. It's more in the open. But just saying, reporting this shit's the start. Addressing it, identifying it, toxic behavior, all of it. And if we're not going to do that, it's not just on men. So that's the other thing, the fact that, you know, it's gender-based violence. What's gender-based violence? It's violence. A lot of these fuckwits would probably be getting into scraps regardless. Whether it was men or women, it just happened that the woman died. Or they had the balls to actually just go over the edge on someone that was perceivably weaker than them. You know, we keep talking about equality and everything being equal and equal and equal. It's like, okay, so then why aren't they just reporting on someone died? Why does it have to be reported that a woman died? Because that's the headline. Like the Arj Barker thing. For 48 hours, the media ran on the fact that Arj Barker threw out a woman because she was breastfeeding. He didn't. He threw her out because the baby was screaming and ruining everyone else's time and has been considerate to his patrons and people that had paid a ticket to go. But the media ran with the headline for 48 hours. It's a breastfeeding woman that he threw out. Everyone got their chocks in a knot. Violence, period, you know, has to stop. But it's women, it's gender-based violence. I don't think, you know, in my opinion, I don't think these people are just going around, they're just all misogynists going around looking for the fairer sex, you know, to gun down just because. These fucking psychos are clearly just, you know, cooked and they're lashing out at whoever's near them happens to be a woman. The same dudes that get thrown into lockup on weekends for having brawls at the pub with fucking guys just because the guy didn't die on the other end of it, just went to hospital, you know, or whatever. Final, you know, what's it called? Disclaimer. Again, overarching. Violence against women should not be accepted. It should not be normalized. These are all just some of my own experiences where it just didn't seem to sit right, where it was literally me having to tell women, this is not normal, go do something about it, and I got pushback on it, saying, no, I can't, you know, for A, B, and C reasons. And they're all weak reasons. And in the end, it didn't matter. Yeah, report it before you become a statistic. Anyway, yeah, I guess I killed 42 minutes. like, share, follow, subscribe, all the usual stuff. Thanks for sharing it out there, getting the word. Yeah, if you have anyone that you think we should be bringing on the pod, whether it's just with me or with the boys or with another group, if anyone you want me to bring back, interestingly, I was going to bring back some of the people that had come on in the past and talk about DV just as a follow-up because it's been over a year, nearly two for some. And I was just going to get like a snapshot of where they're at now in the recovery and everything like that. Might be an interesting listen. But yeah, smoke crack.
Hold up.